Succession number 20511, Reel 1.
Arthur Mulder, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
Old Woking.
Which year was this?
1933.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Old Woking?
Yes.
Where did you go to school?
The Old Woking Infant School, and then the Kingfield County Secondary School.
How old were you when you finished your schooling?
14.
So that would have been when the war had finished?
Yes. Yeah, it was. In fact, I was the last. My group was the last group to leave school at the age of 14. The following group, the age went up to 15, that same year.
Do you have any Second World War memories?
Yes, I can remember the day war was declared. It was a Sunday, bright sunny day, about midday. Me and my sister and brother were playing in a wigwam outside the kitchen window. I remember my mother shouting, "Shut up!" And we heard the Prime Minister saying, I think it was the words were, "Inconsequent, we're now at war with Germany." If I remember rightly, that was the actual words he used. Later, my father hadn't been called up yet. And I saw all these lights showing up in the sky. And I said, what's them like, Dad? Those searchlights looking for enemy aircraft. What enemy? Only six. Well, the Germans, they're coming over here. And then they built all these air raid shelters. Ours were the ones that were built into the ground. Our local one was one built on the surface. And nearly every night we was off to the railway shelters because we heard the bombers going over to London. That was during the Blitz. Where we actually lived, there was very little activity, except for one evening there was a stick of bombs dropped about 300 yards away from our house, landing in the cornfields. We understand that one man killed him on his bike, and one of them, they never did find him actually. He seemed to have, all they could find was parts of his bicycle. Never did find him. But that was really the only incident we had of war.
What was your address during the war?
Across the road, I was working.
Did any other bombs fall in Woking area?
Yes, there was the doodlebugs. One landed in a cornfield about half a mile away from us in Guinness's farm. And it exploded. There was a house, well, quite amazingly, about 150 yards away, there was a man named Bucknell. And he's he worked for the Guinness's farm, and his bungalow was 150 yards away from where the bomb went off. It never got touched. There wasn't even a window broken. Yet when them same bombs landed in London, well, it almost destroyed London. Quite amazing. And we used to see these doodlebugs going across. Just wait for the light to go out. But the light went out, they dipped and went down. And we should almost follow them down, you know.
Did many V1s fall in Woking area?
No, only that one. The V2s, never saw any of them. They went straight into London, I believe. Or I think they went up to, they was aimed up north as well, I believe. Not too sure about that.
Were there any troops or armed personnel in Woking area?
Oh yes, Woking was the sort of headquarters. Blackdown Knapp Hill, which is 2 or 3 miles out of Woking. In fact, it became the headquarters of Royal Military Police. and further afield, the Medical Corps got their headquarters. And then also, we got a lot of Italian prisoners who used to come and clean the ditches and that all around our work in the area.
Did they have a camp nearby?
Not quite sure where the camp was, but there was an awful lot of them who'd come around cleaning ditches out and things like that. And they also landed up making baskets, a basket of willow, and selling them to the locals.
How did they get on with the local people?
Quite well, yeah. I quite clearly remember they were. We also had the Canadians and Americans around. Again, they were based up in Blackdown and places like that. And they used to do manoeuvres at Old Woking too, and we used to follow them. They're quite funny, really. We get all the kids following the troops through all the mud and the rivers and that, picking up the empty shells when they fired their ammunition, which was blank, I believe. But that was quite a lot of fun when we were kids.
Did the soldiers cause any disturbance or nuisance during
the
war?
No, not at all. No, there was no. They were, if I remember, they were well behaved. Remember, we was only 6 and 7 at the age, so they wouldn't have bothered us.
Any celebrations at the end of the war?
Oh, absolutely. Our street, Gloucester Road, was blocked off, and we had rows and rows of tables with jellies and cakes and they'd all made. And bunting everywhere, races up and down the road, and we did. We really enjoyed it. It was great fun. I wish, funny you're talking about this. Now there was something, was rather sad. There was Mrs. Jelly. Now her son Stan was killed in the Royal Oak. Royal Oak was torpedoed and he went down with it. And after we had our celebration, we realised that Mrs. Jelly hadn't been spoken to. And nobody had gone over and put their arm around her. And that, let's just recall that now, funny enough. And we all felt, all of, certainly the adults did, felt very sad that we hadn't actually involved her with the parties. Yeah, and it's funny, you know, she got left out, really. And it was quite a while, people were just saying, well, why didn't we talk to Mrs. Cheeseman, you know?
Mrs. Jelly.
We also had a Mrs. Cheeseman locally, too, by the way. I can quite clearly remember that. It was strange.
Now, how did you come to be in the army yourself?
Oh, got called out for my national service, and don't ask me the date offhand, I can't remember, in 1951, and went to Shorncliffe and done my basic training, and with the Queen's Regiment.
What was that like?
Really, a new young soldier, you know, sort of, but I quite enjoyed it, really, to be honest. Except there's some ranges at Hythe where we go and learn to shoot, and they were always cold, and this was in the summer. There was to be a wind blow across them, and we absolutely froze, unbelievably. And the only relief we got was when the naffy came around and gave us a cup of tea, but we absolutely froze to death there. Even huddled together under tarpaulins, that we were still cold, and they expected us to fire our rifles there. Oh, it was honestly, and I talk to people now who were with me, and they all remember it. The one thing there, it was the cold.
How did the NCOs treat the recruits?
Oh, very well. Yeah, we said my Sergeant White, don't forget him, because I'll think about it. Before I joined the army, I used to belong to a rifle club at Kingfield called the Bulldog Club. And so when I went in, I knew how to fire a rifle. And we'd gone down the ranges, sighted our rifles, and we had 100 yards, we had five shots at the target. And I put four in the bullseye. And Sergeant White said to me, "Now, Mulder, there's 5 shillings there, if you can put the fifth one in." So I did. I know I'm boasting about this, but it's true. So I did, and I picked up his 5 shillings. Because I hadn't told him that I knew how to shoot anyway, so.
Was he pleased or displeased?
Oh, no, he's a nice man. No, he's a nice man. Yeah. In fact, all our initial training, NCOs were quite good. I can't actually recall one that we didn't really like. Different when we got to the battalion. That was different altogether.
Did that happen after Shorncliffe?
Yeah, we went from Shorncliffe to Iserlohn, Germany. Quite a nice barracks too. All the showers were all tiled, and you know, it was really something like a hotel, really, but it wasn't. It was very nice. Big wide roads, gardens all round. It was, yeah, quite nice.
Which battalion was this?
Queen's Regiment.
First Queen's?
Yeah, the Queen's Royal Regiment. No.
Is this the West Surreys?
No, the Queen's. It's Guildford. Their headquarters are Guildford. But I never went to Guildford. I went straight from Shorncliffe, Canterbury, which was a staging post, and then to Iserlohn. I spent 16 months, I think it was, there.
What kind of things were you doing?
Well, basic training. We'd done... one was a big exercise in Sennelager, which was the German training grounds. We'd done a big NATO exercise there. And that were quite... Taught you a bit about it. War, because we'd done an advance overnight but across the River Weser, I think it was, on boats. It was raining and we got drowned, absolutely drowned. We had to wait for the boats to come. There were these canvas folding boats, and in the dark, getting into the boats, our brain gunner, he put in a prowl with his brain gun at the ready, and we touched the bank, and the officer shouted, "Right, brain gunner, off you get." So he jumped and went straight under the river. We had to drag him out. He went under his brain gun, he went under the water. He dropped his brain gun, that's still there as far as I know. And... let them drag him out and get him onto the bank. Coughing and spluttering he was. But he lost his brain gun, which I think were quite expensive. Anyway, we carried on advancing there, and we reached a position where we had to dig in and done all that. And we spent all night on stand two, no sleep. Because we were expecting an attack. All pretend stuff, I know. And so in the morning, sort of stand down, breakfast come up, get your breakfast, back to your trenches with our mess cans. And we just started to tuck into our breakfast when all hell let loose, because the sappers had laid all gun cotton in front of us, and they blew the lot up. And all our mess can got full of mud and dirt, and all our cups of tea, it was full of dirt after. It was a mess. Then we had to retire, and all we had was a bottle of water. We had nothing to eat because I got ruined, and we marched. We retired for about another 4 hours before we settled down and got something to eat. And that went crossing river, cross country, and crossing, wading through rivers, just with one bottle of water. So that really sort of helped us learn a little bit about what war was about and what we could expect.
How did you get on with German civilians?
Fine. Oh no, they were great. Yeah. No, because it was some time after the war, 51, and they'd got used to British troops there, and their economy was starting to grow again, I believe, things like that, and they got on quite well with the British troops, or most of the British troops. There was one or two who still didn't like the Germans. After all, some of the boys had lost their fathers and uncles there during the war, and so there's that resentment, a little bit of resentment still there, but generally we got on quite well with them. Yeah. That was another interesting thing too, because the old king died, and we had a service in Iserlohn Church. So we slow marched all through Iserlohn to the church, and as a service for the old king. And I always remember this, and I always loved the last post. And they played the last post and Abide With Me together. And I can hear it now. It was absolutely beautiful. And the church was such a church that it all reverberated around the rafters. And you know, you could, and it really was something.
And after Germany?
What happened? I'd done about 16 months service, and they wanted volunteer to go to Korea. So now, my father had gone out to back in the 30s and 20s to India and places like that. So I thought, I think I'll go out that way as well. So I held my hand up and said, I want to go to Korea. They said, well, haven't got enough service, you've only got 6 months to go. Unless you sign on. Oh, what's that? I'd introduced a 3 years with the colours and 4 years in reserve. They said, but you can transfer the Fusiliers providing you sign on. Otherwise, it's a waste of time, you know. So I thought, I sign on. So I signed up for a three with the colours and 4 year in reserve engagement just to go to Korea.
Had your father been a professional soldier?
He was RA Medical Corps. Yeah, because he had several periods of in the forces, funny enough. Back in the 20s, they seemed to be able to go in the forces and come out when they want. At least according to his service record, I read. And then during the war, of course, he was called up as a medic. He achieved the rank of sergeant nurse, I think they called him in them days. And he got demoted, actually, because my old grandfather died, and he came home on leave to his funeral. But the family were all upset, so he stayed on another day. But when he went back, because he took a further day's leave, they demoted him back to private again. but he did achieve his rank by the time he came out after the war was finished. So, But it's all because of him I decided to go to Korea, just to go out that way. So I followed his footsteps.
So what was the procedure once you'd signed on for 3 years?
Oh, we transferred to the Royal Fusiliers in Iserlohn again, because they were there. And as we transferred, the battalion moved out and came back to England. Went to Worley Barracks in Brentwood, or Brentford.
Brentwood,
that's right. And from there, we'd done some training in Norfolk, which is miles from anywhere. always remember that training because we were doing this advance to contact, they called it. And as we're advancing across this open field, there's millions of rabbits running in front of us. That was quite funny. But there, all we done was just sort of really, it was, I thought it was a bit of a waste, really, because we'd done a bit of live firing. But anyway. I remember we'd done a two-night exercise, and we came back, and all we'd had was hardtack, sort of corned beef and hard biscuits and water to drink for that period. And when we came back, we expected a nice large meal waiting for us, and we got sardines on toast. So, the company commander got the cooks out, and we had a decent meal about 11 o'clock at night. Yeah. And we was absolutely exhausted because it had been a hard two nights, you know. But they didn't really set us up for what where we were going to.
Why not?
Because Korea is a totally different thing altogether. In Korea, if you're not going downhill, you're going uphill. There's no sort of happy medium. It was quite a thing. Yeah. And then we left Worley, got on a boat called the HMS Hallidale. Do you know, I cannot remember where we sailed from. Just cannot remember.
What was the voyage like?
Oh, great. Yeah, apart from when we went through the Red Sea. During it, we had we had entertainment, we had film shows on deck. And one or two of the boats could perform. We had one was a hypnotist. Don't recall his name at all. But he was a hypnotist, and he's get the men up there and do what hypnotists do, you know. And the sailors, they were well into judo, things, this sort of thing, and done a bit of judo demonstration. All that sort of, apart from that, we just sat around and not done a lot. But it was not a bad voyage. Took a long time. But as I say, when we got to the, it was fine until we got to the Red Sea. And a hurricane, or a tornado, had gone through, and we caught the edge of it. And initially it was great, because we were all up on deck, hanging on to the rails, and the waves are coming over the boat, and washing us, you know. Totally brilliant. We're thoroughly enjoying it. But gradually, one by one, we disappeared down to our bunks, because we were all getting seasick. It was absolutely terrible. And our bunks were like, you can imagine, a lot of bunk beds all bolted together. Iron they were, and not very comfortable. But that was about 5 weeks. Done all that. We did have one nice incident, because we was in the Indian Ocean, and an aircraft carrier, British aircraft carrier, we saw him as a dot, and he got closer and closer, come alongside, and the skipper hailed us and wished us well and all that. You know. I always thought it was the HMS Eagle for some reason or other, but I'm told it wasn't. But there again, nobody remembers what it was, so they all remember doing it. But that was nice. That was good. Stopped off in Colombo for a few hours. Singapore. Singapore is beautiful if you're able to see a little bit, because all the lights up on the cliff. Singapore is so it seems to be one big cliff from the sea. That was quite good.
Had you gone out as a battalion or just as reinforcement?
As a battalion. Yeah. Yeah, that was. We did get reinforcements. They went to Hong Kong initially. Actually, some of the chaps, they weren't old enough to serve in a war zone. And I understand they had to go to Hong Kong first, or Japan. Wait till their birthdays come along and they could join us. And I believe that happened.
What was the deadline? What was the age?
I'm not quite sure. I was 19. So I presume they was a couple of months. I mean, one of the chaps I know, he was about 2 months short. And he had to wait 2 months before he could join the battalion. You've got to remember that, because there was one or two Second World War veterans there. But basically, we were all either National Service, who had been ordered to go there, or volunteers, like myself, and was all 19, 20 years of age. And when I think back, we didn't know what the heck we let ourselves in for. You know, all very sad, really, but... yeah, we had George Alcombe, he's our standard bearer in our, he was my one of the corporals in my company, but he was a Second War veteran. So he knew a bit about what it was all about, you know. But nobody ever tells you. But when we arrived in Busan, that was good because an American band marched up and down the quay, and they were... playing to us as we de-embarked. That was quite good. I forget the name of them, but they were well known for doing that. And all their instruments painted white. And then from Busan on lorries to an American camp. And the first meal I got was a half a boiled turkey and some vegetables and a cup of cold coffee. It was the very first meal. Oh. And then we went to a reserve position, and don't ask me the names of the place because so long ago I've forgotten. But I know we landed up at the front line. We took over a position from the Canadians, the French Canadians. And we crept in all very silently and quietly, so the Chinese wouldn't know. We stood till all night long. And in the morning, when it got daylight, we heard over some loudspeakers, "Good morning, Royal Fusiliers, and how are you?" It was the Chinese. They'd known we'd moved in. Quite remarkable, really. They actually knew that what we'd done overnight. And they welcomed us. And then they used to have these speakers there, and every morning, or nearly every morning, there's a call to us. "Well, why don't you come and join us? We've got bread and we've got jam, and we let you. You've got envelopes and stamps that you can write to your loved ones, and you know, sort of things we couldn't understand really because we're living better on bread and jam." You know.
Were you in a platoon and company at this time?
No, I was in B Company.
Do you remember the platoon you were in?
No, I don't recall the number of the platoon, but it was the platoon commander was 2nd Lieutenant Larratt.